Good morning. Today is Thursday, October the 13th, 2016. This is the Josephine County Board of Commissioners County Administration Workshop. Commissioner Heck and Commissioner Walker are here. Commissioner Hare had a meeting in Medford, so he's not with us this morning. Agenda item number one, we have legal counsel, a report and recommendation on order 2016-046 in the matter of authorization of sale of county real property by sheriff sale.
Yep, so an exciting agenda item. Since sending out the revised timeline earlier this week that I emailed out, we have revised it again, as it turns out. And we have now scheduled the sale once again for November 15th.
November 15th.
Yes, and the full timeline is available, or should be available, as the final page in your packet. Okay. Now, to accommodate that timeline, we are going to ask that even at the during the course of this meeting, that you are going to hopefully move and make a decision to approve the report and recommendation and also the order attached thereto. And that would actually launch the sale to the extent that we would not be coming again before the order until December 1st, which is after the sale had been completed. So
okay.
That was...
So the only motion and vote we have to do today is the report and recommendation on this particular order so that this can go forward?
Well, yes, we ask you to approve both the report and recommendation and the order, both of which are contained in your packet.
Mm-hmm.
And there may be signature lines for you.
And they can both be included.
That's fine.
Can do that
be in the same motion. Okay.
Yes, as far as I'm concerned, those can be one motion.
Okay, we didn't have to do one before the other.
No.
Can do them simultaneous.
Yeah, to authorize the sale and approve the report and recommendation and an attached order, 2016-046.
Okay. So how many total properties here? I was trying to...
It's 28, as the report reflects. And looking at the list, so Mike tells me, accurately, I assume, Mike tells me that you can discern which ones are forest properties.
That's my question, right?
Go ahead and field it.
Okay, out of these 28 parcels, all but three of those have previously been designated to either parks or forestry, and they have all been alienated by order. The three that were not were all acquired by deed, one of which proceeds go directly to libraries, a property that was bequeathed to the county. And dedicated to library. The other two properties were also acquired by deed, and they stay with Josephine County.
Okay.
Those
that are by deed, when we sell those, and the money is kept, well, two, the other goes to the library.
Right.
Will we keep administrative costs out of that that goes to the library?
Yes.
Okay. The other two, has there been any determination as to what the funds would go to?
No, they're not. There has not been because they were acquired by deed, and there is no evidence that they were acquired by road tax dollars. County has the option to dedicate those proceeds after administrative costs wherever it chooses.
Okay. How much do you anticipate that may be based on these prices?
Well, looking at the properties, excluding the one that goes to the library,
in my pedantic question, as I'm looking at this, how do I know which is going to the library, which is going to the forest, which is going to parks?
Okay, the one going to the library is property 16B-12, and that is located in the city of Rogue River, Jackson County.
But I mean, as I'm looking at it, how do I know that just by looking at it?
Well,
or is there a way of doing that?
Well, going down the list, you'll see it says not acquired by foreclosure, and the property tax ID is in a different format than that which Josephine County uses. Josephine County.
So I can't look at a green one and say, is that blue? That one?
No, it's not color coded.
On the exhibit A, about two thirds of the way down the page. And this is not acquired by foreclosure, 16B-12.
Yes.
And that property,
page,
it says Rogue River Highway, Rogue River?
Yes.
So.
The other two that were acquired by deed are property 16B-20 and 22.
Mm-hmm.
And those The minimum bid on the first one is $7,900. Minimum bid on the second is $23,300, so approximately $31,000.
So after administrative costs, it's not going to be a whole lot of money.
It's not. It's not.
It will be on the tax roll in all the borrowers.
It will, they will be going on the tax roll. A new owner would be right. responsible for maintaining their responsibility for property tax.
Mm-hmm. Are those, I was just looking at there, none of these are improved. Well, I saw one that said improved. 25 is improved.
Yes. And improved could mean various things. If there's a well and a septic field on it, it would be considered improved.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it has some kind of, it's just not vacant.
Right.
Well, I shouldn't say vacant because that implies occupancy, but there's been something done to the property.
Yes, at some point in the past.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Any other questions,
Commissioner? No, ma'am.
Did you get your question answered about what the projected, I guess, general fund income would be?
Yes. Said it would be about $31,000
okay.
minus any administrative costs. So it's not going to be a whole lot of money. I anticipate my maybe $20,000 or even less.
So,
depending on the sales price.
Okay.
And it's worth mentioning, this list was refined down from a much larger mm-hmm. property list when I began the process of filtering through what is best mm-hmm. or most able to be conveyed at this point in time. And the whole various list of county departments have all seen these lists and had opportunity to provide input, and with some of that input I refined further. So mm-hmm. those departments include Public Works, Planning, Forestry, Parks, Treasury, Public Health, and the Assessor's Office.
Mm-hmm.
So this has taken, this refined list has come from a large group mm-hmm. of individuals and departments.
Okay. Next question, and I know this may be one you can't answer, is if this sale is scheduled for November. We had one in June. Do you anticipate the next one to be early winter, or do you think it'll be again another summer sale?
I like not to go
winter.
So late as June. It depends
earlier.
Upon the timeline upon which if there are any foreclosures where we take deed in January, it would require a new schedule to be written based upon that delivery of additional properties if there are any. In the future, I would very much like to do an auction in May and in September.
May and September.
Yes.
Kind of get it on a routine in May and September.
Exactly. Exactly. Doing it this late has complications and additional steps that are required that I would like to avoid in the future. By doing that in September, we would avoid
some of those. Property tax.
Exactly. The 2016 roll was certified on the last day of September.
So it'll be another.
That caused a delay mm-hmm. to get us to where we are for a November sale. Mm-hmm. Doing it prior to that, it would remove that additional difficulty.
And being that this is our second one, some of this is to be understood and factored in. We realize all that stuff. But we've got to get into a system and a cycle.
Yeah.
We can't go back and undo something that we've never done in the first place. So we've only got one shot before this. So good. This is number two. And I would move for a reception of the report, receipt of the report and recommendation, and also for the approval of the. Matter of the authorization of sale of county real property by sheriff's sale order number
46.
I'm sorry. Thank you.
Okay. And I second that motion. Any further discussion or questions?
Cheryl?
Yes.
On the notice, you've got the sale on the 16th. The investor hasn't been reserved, and jury is in the.
Okay.
It's jury day. That's true. That's true. It's jury day.
Does it have to be held on the ambassador?
No.
Well, fine. I mean, it's...
You're going to check room 157?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the idea.
Okay. Is the location in this order?
Not in order, so it's available all the way.
Okay. That's good that we're getting it now because we sent this to the newspaper today.
So, the number of people we had last time, 157, would be more than adequate.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised as we continue having auctions down the road.
Appreciate your positive approach to that.
Well, it's 157 should work.
It would accommodate double.
Yeah, I think so. Does it matter the board's gone? That's the AOC conference.
No, because board action will be on December 1st.
I will not be going to the AOC conference since I'm not running. Mm-hmm. Not going. So the new person probably would go.
Yeah, possibility. I might not go. Possibility.
Okay.
The entire week.
Yeah.
Oh, I guess you two could be here.
Huh? I for sure will be here because I can't justify spending county funds for me to go to an AOC meeting when I'm not going to be in office in January. So that I will not be going. So I will be here in case you need a commissioner there. And 157, if we just move the tables, we can get quite a few chairs. See, the reason there's a lot of tables in there, but if we take all the tables down, but the one that you might need for the clerk of the auction, we can put the chairs in there. So that would be fine. So it'll be room 157. Okay?
Very good. That would remove the need for a microphone as well. If we were to do the ambassador again, I would activate a microphone so that everyone can hear.
Yeah, that room is small enough that you don't need that.
Do you have the order here?
Okay. All right. We have a motion and a second. Any further discussion? Seeing none, roll call, please.
Commissioner Hatt?
Yes.
Commissioner Walker?
Yes. Motion carries.
Thanks again, Mike, for all the minutia observations. Because it might just get to be habitual. You know, we don't have to go through all that.
Yeah, we're getting there.
To be fair, a lot of the minutiae is handled by this lady right here.
Unquestionably.
Specialist in minutiae. That's your job description.
Downtown.
Okay. Good. Thanks.
Places to sign.
We have two places to sign.
One on each document. As to the previous sale, are some of those in also?
Yes, seven properties.
Seven?
That were remaining from the first sale are included in this list of properties for sale.
Okay. Let's go back to Terry.
You see, there are two places to sign.
Well, there were two documents. If you sign both documents, you're done.
Did you sign
one on each document?
I did. Yeah.
Sorry, I may not have said that.
Really. Okay.
Sorry.
All right, we'll keep our fingers crossed for a good turnout.
Yes, and...
Well, and I think that, as Mike's saying, too, that turnout numbers, that should increase as this becomes more routine.
Yeah.
Generates more interest.
Yeah.
And as we learn more about where to advertise, you know, as to where these buyers come from,
yes.
I think, too, will also increase that. So.
Certainly.
Yeah, so we had seven left from the last sale?
Yes.
Okay.
Hi.
Yes, and I've had telephone call interest from interested parties on the auction process, and they're not necessarily all from Josephine County. So there are other people that are interested because the word's starting to get out that the county has these properties that they will be conveying.
Mm-hmm. Okay, particularly towards Jackson County, perhaps?
That's exactly where this recent phone call was from, yes. And I send out letters to all adjacent property owners so that all the neighbors are aware that this parcel that is adjacent to their parcel is available They may have personal interest in bidding for it as
sure.
well.
Okay.
And that paid off on this last sale.
Mm-hmm.
One of those sales was from an adjacent
buyer. Right, the bid at the auction.
Yes.
Well,
great.
Adjacent on both sides.
Yeah, I
actually, that,
all around.
Yeah, that one too. Yeah.
That's
where Apple had
the
property.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, there were a couple, weren't there? Because, yeah, the one fully kind of surrounding also bought.
That's very, on West Side Road was one.
Yeah.
And then there was another one on Soldier Creek, if I'm not mistaken.
Uh-huh. Good. Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. All right, moving on to department business. Do we have public works?
For the auction?
No, public works on order number 2016-044, declaring the county-owned personal property not in use for county purposes as surplus.
That's the auction.
That'd be the auction.
Oh, okay. I thought you were referring to the auction we just...
No, no, ma'am. My auction.
Sorry.
Good morning, commissioners. How you doing?
Yes, it is your auction.
Yes, it is. As you have before, you sent a package up earlier listing 15 items that need to be surplused and sold at auction. Included 8 vehicles and 7 other items, including spare tires, trash pump that's no longer functional, a couple other things that just exceeded their service life at this time. The vehicles have all been replaced. Total miles on those were over 1,600,000 by the time we took them out of service, for an average of life miles of 201,000 each per vehicle for average. Like I said, they've all 7 of them from the other departments, county departments, and 1 comes from Public Works. The one from Public Works was involved in an accident last year and was towed about. Bent frame. Insurance company paid for it. We bought it back from for about $465 and we sold it at auction. We used it for some parts off of it. So,
mm-hmm.
But
part of it out?
Yes, ma'am. Parts of it been removed and used on other or some of our other 97
vehicles. Is it the 90 Jeep Cherokee?
It's actually the 1997 Chevy pickup.
Okay.
Well, we got our use out of it.
Yes, ma'am. We got our use out of it. 97.
Okay. Okay.
97.
Yeah. Well, the one I have the most is the 96 Dodge Ram pickup with 102,000.
Mm. Number 96512. Yes, sir.
Yes.
That was replaced. That was actually purchased from, what was the name? Speed ahead of Bomb. I can't come. I'm drawing a blank on his name. Anyways, he purchased it from Public Works when he was over there. Rich Halliday, excuse me. And, so he bought that and it's run its service life. We actually tried to replace that a couple years ago. We bought an F-250 to replace that one. Mr. Halliday decided to keep the F-250 instead of running it down to his fleet, and he drove that around for a little while, so that's already been replaced. This one is no longer serviceable. It runs extremely bad. It cost us some money.
Okay. I was just wondering what the hell.
Yeah.
Why? 100,000 miles is not that big.
It's not that big, but it's hard miles. This was used to tow around about a ton and a half trailer,
yeah.
Which was more than excessive for what this thing is actually designed to use. That's why we bought the F-250 originally.
Okay.
So it runs. These all vehicles, they all actually run. They're just not serviceable for what we need to do right now.
They're not running.
They're not running well. We have to serve. We have to jump them. All the, have to jump them
mechanic
to get them started.
Mechanic has to ride along.
Mechanic should ride right along with some of these. The couple of buses have some coolant leaks, so we got some blown head gaskets on the buses. One's totaled out. The F-150 has a bad training. You have to actually start it in gear to actually drive it, but it will start. But you can't put it in neutral because you can't get it back in gear. So
you have one of those.
So these. The cost value right now, I've broken down retail value from Kelley Blue Book anywhere from $1,000 to $6,500 for the buses. If we're lucky, if we get maximum value out of it, we may get $20,000 during the auction. I'm not expecting that at all. If we get $500 for the total one, maybe $500 for the Ford, I'll be happy, to be honest with you. So,
what's the story on the propane tank?
We bought a tack tank, and that was brought with it. It came part of the unit itself. We had to take the propane tank off and get a different one. This was mounted vertical. But to make it work, we had to get a separate one. It had to be mounted horizontally. Uh-huh. So we had to take that out. And that's actually a brand new propane tank. It's never been used. So, but they didn't have one. We bought the tack tank itself. They didn't have one that mounted horizontally. So we had to buy
so
a separate one.
No other department needs that propane tank?
You don't know yet. What I do after you guys declare this is excess, we're good to go. I'll notify the departments. Here's the items that we have for auction. And if anybody wants it,
okay.
We'll transfer it to that department itself. I know the fairgrounds came over, looked at our vehicles. Nothing really is even usable by the fairgrounds.
That's what I was wondering about
time.
The propane tank.
Yep.
If any of the emergency services people might need a propane.
Exactly.
Particularly if it's a new propane tank for emergency services, if there's every emergency, if you have propane,
exactly,
not electricity.
Yeah.
We actually tried to trade that in and get a couple of smaller ones for a forklift, but they wouldn't trade it in because they didn't have the right size propane bottles that we needed. So, but yes, after it's declared excess, I notify all the departments, ask them if anybody wants it. 100% so far said no to prior to this auction itself. We'll see if something comes up on this one. So
consistent, sir.
They're very consistent. So.
Okay. So, all right.
Any further questions?
No, no further questions. Awesome. We'll move this forward.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Just have a wonderful day.
You too.
And a sad man, by the way.
Yeah.
I'm sure that Commissioner Hare would love to talk about it.
Commissioner Hare would love to talk about it. He's not here, but I think this would be fine for him.
Sure.
Since he's liaison for that department. It's not the first auction we've done, so he knows what to say. Okay, airports. We have airports this morning.
Good morning.
Good morning. How are you, Mr. Graves?
Good.
Good. Good things happening at the airport. Saw the report on television that they're so happy that we now have a weather station. They get to get weather reports from Grants Pass.
Yeah, actually useful weather reports.
Useful weather reports, yes.
Which is a nice change.
Yes, I don't know who it was. I think it was Wendy that was telling me, someone was telling me that the weather person on one of the television stations was actually excited about that.
Oh, good, good, yeah. So that was a good thing, and yeah, I think KDRV 12 came out and did some interviews with pilots, and they interviewed the Dutch Bros chief pilot, and so they got some good input from some professionals, you know, and that's commissioned and ready to go.
Good.
Very happy about that.
That's an interesting thought.
Okay.
Dutch Bros chief pilot.
Yeah, chief pilot.
Laid back and
he
has his shorts.
Yeah, actually, they had to put a footrest up on the dashboard for him.
Okay, this is an IGA between Joseph Saint County Airports and the Governor's Regional Solutions. We've been talking about this for a long time, and it's happening.
Yeah, yeah. So it's had an interesting history. We got an outright grant from the Governor's Regional Solutions office, but back in 2014, but the funding was not going to be available, we learned, after 9 months until March of 2017. In the meantime, we received indications from the FAA that they were going to give us construction money for this half-length parallel taxiway. And in order to begin a construction project, you have to have a design. So I've been working with Mary Baker of the IFA, the Infrastructure Finance Authority, and they've taken over administration of the grant from the Regional Solutions Transportation Office, and they're going to make the grant directly to Josephine County so that we can speed up the whole process and get the work finished to support the construction. So it's a straightforward IGA. It's a wonderful grant in that there's no match money required, so we have a very limited liability on this. The cost of the project through some initial engineering that's been done on a marketing basis by WH has allowed the FAA to make a determination that there will not be an environmental assessment required, so that has saved or cut $100,000 off the cost of the project, which was originally slated to be about $400,000, and it's now down to about $282,000. So that's the amount of the grant agreement, and we will bring the project in at or below that number.
When will this? When do you anticipate this to be started?
Well, it's already underway, and so I will begin receiving invoices very quickly once the money is fully authorized, which I expect by the end of this month. If you agree to move it forward to the WBS and approve it on the 19th, then I'll forward all the documentation to the IFA, to Mary Baker, the Infrastructure Finance Authority, and they will shortly have the funds available for reimbursements.
Okay.
And the project, the deliverables are an environmental categorical exclusion documentation and approval from the FAA, which we expect to receive by the end of January, and then a package of engineering drawings and bid documents for contractors to bid against, and that should be delivered by the end of March, and we'll go out for bid in April, and hopefully be in a position to start construction on that next summer.
Wonderful.
Yeah.
Wonderful, wonderful.
Well, it's like having elephants. It's only been a couple of years so far, so
yeah. Any questions, Commissioner Heck?
No.
Okay. We'll move this forward to the admin next Wednesday, and can you come and address that?
I will do that.
Okay.
Sure.
All right.
And that'll be a 9 o'clock meeting, right?
9 o'clock meeting next week.
Very good.
We had our night meeting last night.
Yeah, last
so next week is 9 a.m. at the Baxter.
Very good.
Thank you very much.
But thank you very much.
All right. Quarterly update. Community development. Julie Smelter. Good morning. Good morning. So I'm going to try and make this quicker than last time. First, I just want to let you know that I'm reporting on the planning side of it. We're touching a little bit on the economic development side of the department. We've officially only been combined with the building safety department for a month. So I can touch a little bit on that and answer some questions, but I have not included their financial reports or that type of data in this document. Just real quick, I want to talk about the first quarter's revenue. So this first quarter of the new fiscal year, we took in about $120,000. That was for 406 applications. And if you look at the past years, you can see the highest year was last year at 92. So we're quite a bit higher, about almost 30,000 higher than we were last year. And if you look at the five-year average, the revenue we just took in was 40,000 higher for the first quarter. So those are some pretty good financial numbers. I have attached a copy of our draft fee schedule. Arthur is going to be touching on that as well later on the meeting, I see. But I just wanted to let you know just some highlights of that fee schedule is proposing to drop the pre-app fee, which a lot of times, as you know, we've heard a lot of complaints. Mm-hmm. You pay for a pre-app, you pay for your app, you pay for your development permit. There's this whole process. And the pre-app, we're the only county I found that does that pre-app, and it really should just be a service, giving you the information you need to successfully submit the real application. So we dropped the pre-app. That will affect our numbers, but I'm also thinking that will also help encourage more people to come into the department and apply for those permits. Another probably big thing to talk about in here is I am proposing a per-plant compliance fee. In other words, with marijuana, I'm proposing that there be a $20 per plant fee to give them an annual compliance certificate, so to speak. With all of our other land uses and development permits, you get a compliance inspection once you've gone through the building safety department. One of the problems we're having, of course, with the new marijuana industry here is we will get complaints about a property, we'll go out there, we'll determine it to be in compliance, and we'll continue to get complaints, so we continue to go back out there to see if something new has happened. Our thought process is inspect it once a year, determine it to be in compliance, so if somebody calls on it, you can tell them what you found, and you don't have to continue to go out there. The other thing is we have had some growers approach us and talk to us about themselves doing that, imposing their own self-certification, where they were willing to impose almost like a tax on themselves to get this certificate. So if law enforcement drove by, they knew that that property was cleared already and it was compliant. One thing I found in my research is so far, as we know, OLCC has not inspected anyone that does not have their land use, does not have a license, which means I'm guessing 99% of our growers right now are not getting inspected. OMMP, we've had the medical marijuana program for how many years, and this past 2 weeks was the first time they've ever inspected a marijuana grow in Josephine County. So as far as relying on the state to enforce their rules and do the compliance inspections, I'm going to safely say that's not happening, not to the degree we want. I think that this is one way we can get a handle on that.
How did the OMMP, whatever it is, the medical side, how did they determine who they went out and looked at?
last 2 weeks.
You know, I meant to call and ask him that because I did. I know that Sean from the paper had contacted them, and I know they went to 2 of them. I read that in the paper last week, and I want to call OMMP and ask because staff and I were talking about it. Sean is aware of 2 recreational ones. I can't say for certainty, but we're thinking that Sean took them out on recreational sites, not even medical sites. But I have to verify that myself, and I'll have that verified before we go to public hearing on the marijuana regulations. But we're thinking the compliance inspection is one way to get it under control. We're also proposing that 50% of that fee that is collected go to the sheriff, 25% would go to parole, and parole, and then the 25% would be retained by our department. And then the assessor, who is also looking to assess such properties, will be able to use our data to determine the plants that are on there. So it's more than just our office. It's affecting many of their offices. Sheriff is getting called out on these sites as well. Mm-hmm. Connie needs the data and has no access to the data.
So does this apply to just medical marijuana or recreational or both?
All.
All of it.
All. Mm-hmm. Yeah, the per plant compliance certificate fee.
To me right now, the big difficulty is, the big hole in this whole system, is the medical side is basically inspection-free, I mean, as far as in reality goes.
Yeah, they just did their first one ever after 18 years or something.
The recreational side is the focus. Neither side are really inspecting.
They're not. And, you know, I've talked to you a little bit about this before. I've talked to Simon about it at the District 4 meeting. But because the state, in my opinion, has failed us, I would like to see those millions of dollars that have been dedicated to those agencies for enforcement to come to the local law enforcement, because I've explained it before when I went to OLCC and I've called them and said, you know, we've got all these people, they don't have state licenses, and they're like, too bad, that's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
Where are we going to get the money to enforce your rules? You know, this was something they did not tell us about. It's an unfunded mandate. They have not given us the money for it. I would like to see AOC put pressure to get those compliance dollars directed to the locals who are actually doing the compliance inspections and dealing with the issues.
And that would be something, Madam Chair, that I think the board could certainly draft a letter to AOC and also CCing our individual legislators to that end as they're getting ready for this next session.
There is an LC, legislative concept, that I thought was forwarded to you in regards to changing the formula on the recreational marijuana to where instead of 10% going to the counties, 30% would go to the counties. And I responded to that LC to Rob Obey at AOC that this is good progress. And because there is a drafted LC, I'm thinking that that's probably going to be an introduced bill of the legislature to change that formula. My idea on the formula is not ideal, but it's better than it was. They recognize there's a problem, and we, as you say, the board, we will have an opportunity to lobby on that to get changes made. So they know it's a problem.
So instead of getting 10% of nothing, we'll get 30% of nothing.
Well, actually, the way the formula is written now, 10% would probably be anywhere from, you know, 10,000 to 80,000 or something, not very much. So if you go to 30%.
Yeah. But that's after the state gets.
State gets their cost.
But this inspection money is an entirely different line.
Correct. First of all, keep in mind that money, even if you go to 30%, that's based on dispensary sales. That's based on retail sales.
Right.
Which we don't have retail sales because you can go in your backyard and grow it and do whatever you want. So the money where the problems are that we're seeing statewide is where it's being grown.
Mm-hmm.
And those typically are not the areas with the high dispensary, you know, where you're going to have a lot of retail sales. And the money is going where the retail sales are. So even at 30%, we're not going to get enough to cover, to even touch our problem.
Right.
The compliance fee helps keep people, you know, people are telling us they're honest. Let's show it. Let's keep track of that. And it's a way to actually help ourselves because I think at this point, and I'm very vocal about it, I don't think we can rely on the state to help us at this point.
No, we can't. You're absolutely right. And I don't hesitate in saying that either because the fact that they even finally, after 18 years, did their first inspections ever in the entire state, and they came to our county to recognize that we have a problem here. But two inspections, it's not going to cut it.
And I'll tell you what, I wonder if they would even be here, because there was a planner meeting, Planning 101 in Medford about a month and a half ago. And our new code enforcement administrator asked Chris from OMMP, how many have you done in Josephine County? And he said, no. And she said, why not? And he said, we're afraid.
We're afraid.
And then Sean got a hold of Chris, and that's what triggered the inspections, is my understanding. So we need to do this on our own.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not our problem, but we're going to have to do it.
I'm sure that you already have a letter drafted up on this program to go to the state to say you'd like to have this money coming to us. I'm sure you have something in there.
I've got data. I've saved the emails. I've written Carl Wilson earlier, but I would be more than happy to draft a letter for you to send to the state.
I would love mm-hmm. to do that, and we can leave talk about it. I'd be happy to send that out.
And when people have complained to me, because the other thing is that we have people impersonating inspectors. I had two calls last week. People claiming that one was OLCC and one was OMMP. Well, I know OLCC hasn't done any inspections. And OMMP, the way that people showed up, both of these people had the presence of mind to ask for identification. They showed up with badges and guns. In one instance, they said they had uniforms on.
Hmm.
Asked for identification. And neither one of them was that you're not coming on my property until you have identification. Just a badge and a gun doesn't do it. You can go down to Medford and buy the whole chart fit at the
Halloween, you can get them anywhere, huh? At Halloween, you can get them anywhere.
So when they couldn't produce identification, they were very adamant, you're not coming on here until you can show me your identification. Well, at least those two were, but what about some others who don't know? And so those kinds of things, it's because it's harvest season. They want to get in to see what you have and how to get in to get it, kind of thing, to steal mm-hmm. it. So we have to take, as the term is, bull by the horns and do something here. But we need to tell Salem and those regulatory agencies, and when these people complain to us, say, look, file a complaint with them. When they start getting inundated with these complaints, you know, it's the squeaky wheel thing again. If you're not going to be saying something, then, right, you know, you have to say it to the people that have some authority. We have no authority for those things. You know, we can't go on your property and say we're going to inspect. We don't have that authority. It's retained by the state.
We get those calls all the time. People, mm-hmm. and I explain to them, we can't do anything about the plants. We don't regulate number. That's not the county's role. Ours is a land use perspective. We can look at your fence. We can look at the campers. But that's really about all we can do at this point.
Mm-hmm. So,
continuing on with the fee schedule, another area that I've reduced.
Question when it popped up, you mentioned the keyword and the triggered thing, fence. Where are we at? I'm understanding that the legislature did. They don't need fences anymore.
Right. What they're saying is if you have an alternative security plan, they'll look at that. But the reality is they're still requiring fences is what we're seeing.
Okay.
So, And again, keep in mind, those are for the ones that are going to get that permit from the state.
Sure.
Okay. I had a complaint in regards to the state's required of an 8-foot engineered fence
mm-hmm.
being set back because the planning department is determining that's a structure and has to meet the setbacks. I've had a complaint about that. I personally don't have a complaint. They say you're creating no man lands between properties. Well, the whole idea is you can put your fence up.
No man's land.
Yeah, you can put your fence up. Your fence could be 5 feet or 6 feet or barbed wire or whatever your fence is, up to 7 feet. But then if you have a grow, you have to set that grow back, and then you have to comply with the state in regards to a fence. So this applies on rural residential, correct?
Currently, if you have a solid fence in Josephine County, it is supposed to meet a setback.
Mm-hmm.
Currently. So that's not anything new.
Define that, a solid fence. So if you have a
sight obscuring.
Sight obscuring.
So if you cannot see through the fence or more than 50% of the fence, it is considered, I'll call it a solid fence, and you have to meet a setback. We have that rule.
That's in our current land code.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And the state code, state building safety codes, say if it's over 7 feet, it also has to be engineered.
Okay. Would you send me those references, the paragraph?
I'm going to give you those right today. We'll go through.
Oh,
when we get to them, okay?
I'm jumping ahead then. Sorry.
So I'm just going to go real quick on some of this other stuff. So I'll talk a little bit about the housing needs in a hair here, but we need to create more opportunities for housing. So as far as plats that create four fewer lots, those smaller plats, we reduce the review fee to encourage, that's more your mom and pop type subdivision. We reduce the fee on that to encourage more of that development to meet our housing needs. And have what we've learned with the LUBA appeal since I've been here is we're giving thousands of dollars away on these appeals. So we've increased the fees on the appeals, the copying for the appeals, and things of that nature. In a nutshell, that's big changes in the fee schedule.
Okay.
Just going on to personnel enforcement. So since the last quarterly report, we've hired our code enforcement administrator. She started the first week in August. And her name is Denise Montijo, and she's doing wonderful. We've had great responses. She really has this attitude that we're not out here to hammer on you. We're here to work with you to meet the code. And people have been quite receptive to her. She's developed, rather than putting the hammer down, she's come up with compliance plans with them. She has, as far as marijuana complaints right now, she has over 100 open files, meaning ones that we know there are violations on that need to be followed through to completion right now. Just real quick, I want to talk to you about districts. This map here is something new to our department. What we have right now is when you come into the planning department, you know, planners take turns at the front counter. They help you fill out an application. They may never see it again. And then Melissa randomly assigns them to people. And what we're finding is two things. One is you can have a planner work on a project and not know what the other planner said to them ahead of time.
That's a great idea.
So the projects aren't getting consistent responses sometimes. And the other thing is the public doesn't know who to talk to. So what we've done is we've divided the county into regions, and we followed basically the same regions that Building Safety does. They follow some topographic lines and things of that nature. And we've developed, what we did is we took all the applications for all the permits for the last 5 years, divided them into easy, medium, and hard, mapped them out and said, okay, where can we divide this into four districts where everyone's getting basically the same number of hard, medium, and easy cases based on a five-year average? And then it pretty much followed those same districts that Building Safety had. So now what happens is if somebody, let's say you're from the very north and you have a question, you know exactly who to call. You call that brown person there, which is Jeff. Or if you're in Williams, Jeff is your guy. If you're in Merlin, James is your guy. So people know exactly who to contact whenever they have questions versus this random, maybe talking to somebody the first time and somebody else the second time and somebody else the third time. So it's going to help with consistency, processing, and customer service.
It helps, from my perspective, it helps James and Grace or whomever take more ownership of these projects because this is in their district. They know and they take ownership of that as well.
I agree with you, Commissioner, and I think, you know, that's one thing we found with Denise, because Denise is the code enforcement administrator. She's very aggressive with them, and what she's finding is it's really easy to give somebody information if you don't have to deal with the follow-up on it.
Mm-hmm.
This way, you're accountable to what you're telling that person because you're going to have to deal with it if there's problems or issues with it as well.
That's good.
Personnel, just to let you know, we've done training this quarter. They've all went through the public records training. They all went through the ethics and planning webinar that I had them do. And all but one went to the Planning 101 training session in Medford. So we're trying to make sure everyone's on the same page and understands planning principles and laws and codes and things of that nature. That's something that they have not had in the past, so that was something I really felt necessary. Planning projects, just so I'll zip through these real quick. At the current time, for a development permit, we don't have an application process. You don't fill out anything. You don't sign anything saying you're telling the truth or accountable until you get a permit. You actually sign the permit. So there is no application. So we've created an application. The other thing is we're a planning department, but we've never required plans. We've never required building plans or site plans. And what we found is people come in for a permit for a garage, which is really a house or something to that nature. And we had no way of knowing because we weren't requiring that. So we've now, starting the 15th, which is Saturday, or really Monday, this district map comes into effect, as does a new application for the department where you have to submit those that documentation or it's going to get returned to you. Another project we did was with the public health. They're working on part of the the hazard mitigation plan, and they asked for our assistance in creating a map of where, in the event of a disaster, we could have mass burial sites. So we went through and we eliminated all the floodways, all the slide soils and clay soils, high water tables, et cetera, and came up with a map of, in the event of a disaster, these are the areas where we should be burying our dead. So we've done that for them this quarter. We have the draft marijuana management amendments, which is the big one. I really don't want to take a lot of your time, but some of this is really important. And I just, Shel, you talked about the fencing. That's on page one of attachment four. Mm-hmm. Basically, the rules stay the same, that you have to have a setback and everything. But what it really clarifies is the material that you can have for a fence. What we're seeing and what we're getting complaints are, and people laugh, but we have photos. So what we'll find is people will pile cars, and that becomes their fence. They will pile root balls or tree trunks, which is a huge fire hazard, and that becomes their fence. The state is requiring these fences, but not requiring what type of material they are. And we as a county, we've had, the office has fielded a lot of complaints. We've seen a lot of complaints. We're concerned about the hazards with some of these. So we basically said it's solid color. It's not temporary material such as tarps, straw bales, junk cars, etc. Mm-hmm. So that's really the big change you're going to see in the fencing. So the other thing
is... What is currently there is going to be there.
Nope. Well, yes and no. If they were legally approved, so let's say they came in for a permit for their fence in April, and we gave them a permit for that fence, and it's tarp, it's legally approved. We gave them the permit for that. Too bad we didn't have rules in place to dictate the material. But so if they didn't have that fence up and they put that, they didn't have a permit, but they put that fence up, you can't grandfather something illegal. So when we go, if these rules pass, we go through and we write everybody with a fence and say, these are the rules. You know, if you can prove to us you had a permit prior to such and such date, keep it up. If not, you need to take it down or comply.
So these are going to the Planning Commission?
These go to the Planning Commission on the 31st.
The 31st of this month?
Yep. Just the one thing I do want to bring to your attention, it's something that I've talked to you about before, is, and I guess I kind of warned you it was coming, is there is a violation section contained in these. So it's on page 13. And what I did was, at current time, we just rely on people's goodwill to comply with us, and maybe it'll get referred to legal counsel, and a couple years later, maybe we'll get a hold of them. This actually creates a citation section. I know there's been issues with this in the past, but this follows what the state statutes allow a county to do. This is the same violation section that Douglas County imposes. So it's actual, and it's pretty clear. Citation for, if you go to page 14, it actually has the language on it. But I did warn Wally that I was putting that in there, and he said, well, just make sure the commissioners know ahead of time that that's going to be going in there. So that is going to be proposed on the 31st. I feel pretty confident with it. It's state statute. It's verbatim state statute, pretty much. So it'd be pretty hard to argue that it would be illegal or should not be in a code.
Theoretically.
Yes. So.
Because obviously this is going to be an issue for many folks.
Right. But, when we went to these town hall meetings, we kept hearing people say, I'm doing nothing wrong.
Right.
I just want to have my personal grow in my own backyard. So if they're doing everything right, what would be the problem with that? And this applies to not just marijuana, but everything in the code. When I looked at when I was charged with looking at the rules for rural residential, what I found was the problems apply countywide. For example, the fence problem, it's not just in rural residential. Mm-hmm. It's countywide. So we needed to look at everything countywide. So this will go to Planning Commission on the 31st. They'll make a recommendation to the board. The board will have to have a hearing on it as well. So the presentation I give to the Planning Commission will be the exact same one that I give to the board at that time. I do encourage you to read through those on your own and just call me with any questions you have. We've been doing some public speaking, trying to educate the public about our permitting processes, our rules, marijuana, etc. We've done 4 realtor meetings, 1 chamber one. We have 2 rotaries and a Republican Party, I think, coming up this year that we'll be going to. Ongoing projects, we have what we've found. I ran the numbers on housing, and based on the population projections from 2010 to 2015, to meet the demand for the people coming into the county, unincorporated part of Josephine County, we need to create 155 housing units a year to meet the demand just for those rural areas. And our highest year had 109 housing units. So if we look just at our best year, we were even 45 behind. So that
in all areas of the county, is it everything, you know, as far as demand, Wolf Creek, Cave Junction?
It excludes the city, so it excludes Grants Pass and Cave Junction. So it's just on our unincorporated. But what that tells us is that drives the policies that we move forward as far as how easy do you make it to get house permits, and what do we bother the state to revise on our behalf to allow us to meet these housing needs. So we're working on beautification of Exit 61 in Merlin. We're Commissioner Hare knew a man who was interested in helping on a project there, so we've met with him and doing some brainstorming on how we can clean that up and doing some downtown improvements and signage in that area. We've been working with Scott Chansey on providing more bus shelters in Cave Junction and more bus stops. We actually have a meeting coming up October 20th with Cave Junction to get more input on where they would like to see those. That'll help us get people from Cave Junction into school and into jobs that perhaps they didn't have those opportunities before. You know, we're just looking at more amendments on housing, the agritourism, and processes to make it easier to get through our 2-inch code. Looking at creating more industrial lands. Working this winter, we're working on an ag inventory. We want to see how we can help our farmers out in the rural areas increase sales or see what problems or things are coming into. Hopefully create the wine guide. Cheryl, you and I have talked about that before, food and veggie guide. I've talked to Larry and Cheryl about an airport survey, kind of a business retention survey of the airport users to see what they need to help us focus where maybe we should be doing more improvements in that area or around the airport. One thing we've known since I got here is we need to improve our permitting and our tracking software. That was something that the Chamber of Commerce BRE survey showed us was people weren't happy with. There's been $20,000 budgeted for that, and just to let you know, that's 6 digits. I mean, the software is typically about $120,000. So, you know, my goal is to try and save as much of that economic development money as we can to put in there to get that software in place. Winter is the time for us to do that before we get into the busy season again. I've talked to you before about a website. We still want to do the website where you've got your planning and building, your business assistance. Illinois Valley has asked for more on tourism, so I'm going to be meeting with John from the City of Grants Pass to see how we can perhaps even tie that in and have tourism on there as well. Administrative, you know, we've consolidated departments. We're working on the co-location. Ryan was at the office last week trying to figure how we can redo the counter and, of course, what that would cost. So he's working on those numbers for us. Customer service news, real quick, that we've added Friday. We were Monday through Thursday, 8 to noon. The lines are terrible. Staff supported adding Friday, so we added Friday. Mm-hmm. Building safety is open on Friday, so it makes sense if you consolidate. We have those consistent hours. So the planning side will also be open on Fridays now from 8 to noon. And we've been having a lot of issues with public works issues, access, things of that nature, and we've been having regular meetings with them to try and resolve those issues as well. So if you're hearing those complaints, hopefully those will minimize as we go forward. So, the only other thing I have real quick is the ED plan, the Economic Development Strategic Plan with the city, will be coming forward to you soon for approval. And then just a reminder that we need to talk about the SREDI appointment. Hopefully, Cheryl, you bring that up.
Yeah, I was going to bring that up today, and there's a matter of respect there. And but since you're here, if you don't mind me talking about it, is that I got the information from the SREDI, that was what was passed on to you, talked to them, got a copy of their charter, and the representative from a government entity does not have to be a county commissioner. It has to be designated who it is. It's preferable that it be someone in a position of decision-making, so my proposal is which I have not written up yet because Simon's not here. I didn't want to bring it in today. He's not here. But is to, for the Board of County Commissioners, to issue to the to you as an alternate to attend the meetings with voting rights in the absence of the commissioner.
Okay.
So that way, if the commissioner and you both go, the commissioner would, because we only have one vote, so
right,
the commissioner would vote, but if the commissioner can't go or the commissioner wants you to, you could vote in that place. So that would delegate you the authority to vote in place of the commissioner. So I'm going to write that proposal up and get the delegation prepared for you. It would be a delegation from the board, and my recommendation would be the delegation from the Board of Commissioners to you until revoked.
Okay.
So it would be in place until such time as we, because it would go from the board as a body to you as a person, and that way it would go, you know, transcend any changes with the board, but you as a person, as long as you're in that position, you would have it. If you were to ever leave, then of course that would have to be redone.
Sure.
But
we'd have that constant, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I would probably continue to go to all the board meetings anyway.
Oh, yeah.
I find a lot of value.
I encourage that. And that way we would give SoReady, the letter, and that way they could accept a vote from you or from a board member.
Okay. And they did ask me about that on, I think we met Tuesday, I think we had a meeting, mm-hmm. and they asked about that. So
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just so we don't forget about that.
No, I've been working on that, so.
Okay. I just
we'll probably have that done within the next week or so.
I just want to throw one thing out there real quick. It'll take a minute. You might get complaints about guest house rules or camper rules. Department of Land Conservation Department came down and said the guest houses that we are allowing are not legal and we have to stop. And the same thing with the long-term campers. So I've asked them for clarification. They came back and they said, no, it's done. You need to figure something else out. So that is an amendment. I'll be coming to you this fall to try and address those issues.
So what is the problem with the guest houses?
You can, in the state of Oregon, by law, you can have one dwelling per property.
Mm-hmm.
And a guest house is considered a second dwelling. So they're not allowed. And when it was passed, we went back and looked at the order that approved them. The order that approved it was only as a medical hardship, which said if you have a medical hardship on your property, you can have this stick-built guest house, which is interesting because state law says that medical hardship can only be a manufactured dwelling.
Mm-hmm.
So we've got some real issues with that. The other thing is, you know, when I was working on the marijuana rules, I had 4-month max on these grow sites. And people are like, well, what are we going to do? We need to patrol our property. So I went back and I amended it to say that, you know, 9 months with a conditional use permit. And the state came back and said, no, not at all. Nope, nothing. It's 4 months, period. As a matter of fact, they want to see there's pressure. And I'll read through it and see where the loopholes are. But they even said 30 months is really the maximum stay. But 4 if you're doing the dry camping. So
someone can have a trailer or a camper on the property for people to protect their grow for only 4 months.
Correct. That's the current rule?
That would be sufficient, actually.
It's not, though, because they go out there from May until harvest. November is how long they're out there. And it's not just one. We're seeing compounds,
sure,
which is adding to garbage, fire, contamination, mm-hmm. waste, mm-hmm. guns, noise.
Mm-hmm.
Other than that.
Well.
Smell. The sun. Anyway, so I'll be working on that and bringing those.
The reason I said that should be sufficient is typically the grow site isn't in peril until such time as the plants start to mature. You know, they have people out there to water and all that kind of stuff. But when the plants are stolen, when you start having a problem, it's when those plants are maturing.
Yeah, but I mean, if I've got, as you can figure, I've got $100,000 invested in this grow area, and I've got plants I stuck in the ground in May. I want to have some oversight of that grass. They're not going to, but I mean, people go and pop those things out, or
they do
mar them up, or spray them, or whatever. I mean, you know. If I have that investment, I want some oversight there.
Well, they have their fence and they have their security.
Yeah, right.
You know, if you have a camera there, you can watch the camera from your house.
Well, then they take the camera and the fence.
But keep in mind on a lot of these, especially the larger grows, if you have a vacant property, if you're in a farm zone and you're putting in a marijuana crop, by state law, you cannot put a house out there with it. Mm-hmm. You know, if there's a house there already, mm-hmm. you can grow marijuana. But you can't put a marijuana crop and then build a house.
Right.
So they're out there 9 months for sure. Since I've been here, I keep getting calls about people with guns walking up and down the road.
Sure.
We're afraid mm-hmm. to walk on our road. Dogs are attacking us, things of that nature. So they've had them, you know, they're out there. And
yeah.
we need, it's an issue, and I don't know how.
Yeah.
There's no way to get around it. They're just going to have to comply. Yeah. And we're going to have that citation ability and some other issues.
Because the state limits it.
Yes, it's a state law.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's it.
Okay. But that brings out the thinking today of your
it's a challenge.
It'll
continue to be a challenge.
Thank
but it's for our best, right?
Good report. Thank
we
you.
Want to find neutral ground between the
sure.
industry and the neighbors.
Yes.
So.
Sure. Thank you very much.
Okay, fairgrounds.
And in your spare time, Julie, I would like to get the.
In your spare time,
I'd like to get some other your spare time.
Oh sure,
I'll do that this weekend.
How are you?
Good.
Good.
Making it.
Well, hi there.
Hello.
Long time no see. Where are you?
I thought you needed to see another face.
Yeah. How are you?
You're doing good.
Doing good.
Good.
That's good.
Yeah. The good news is that we're headed out. I brought Mary today for several reasons. Wanted to talk to you a little bit about grants and what's going on with that. But we're headed out to Playcraft to deliver a check today that we had received from Rotary for the piece of playground equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And then
Arthur Dubs, too.
And Arthur Dubs. And then we're headed out, and then we're going to stop at Dutch Brothers on the way back at the corporate, because we're going to Merlin, so might as well do it all at one spot.
Good.
So,
anyway. So I'm hanging out with Peggy today.
So
you what?
Drug her along.
Hanging out with Peggy today.
I drug her along.
Reluctantly, right?
Yeah. Absolutely.
Yeah. A little.
Lots of things going on at the fairgrounds. RV storage is up and running, and we currently have about 8 units in there right now. We've had so many people that have come, and it's a first come first served basis. And there's at least 15 to 18 that will still be coming in by the end of the month. So
where are you putting them?
In the dairy barn.
In
the indoor enclosed dairy barn. And we left everything exactly the same as what we did last year. It was it's good for us. Once it's in there, we check it every day, but everything's locked and secured. And it's just a great place to put a motorhome or a trailer or an RV or boat. We have lots of boats in there. So, That's definitely has been a good move. It's not much wear and tear on the building. There's no power that's going on the inside of it. And, you know, once they bring them in, they can't bring them back out until the end of March. In April, we have a goat show, so we have to have them out in April. But it's a nice use for a building to still be able to help pay for the electricity.
Secure, no electricity needed.
Right.
No heat needed.
No heat needed.
I have a question.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an estimate on the cost to redo the commercial building?
We do. Can we talk when we get down to Mary on that? Because that's part of her discussion.
And the arena? You know, the roof issue
the
problem with the arena. Okay.
Well, I'll address that, too. Yeah. We're looking at that, right, as we speak. So I'll move right into that here in just a second. Since fair, we have been busy every single weekend with different kinds of events, from weddings and steelheaders, rascals. Team Oregon is there twice a month, and that's been great out in the parking lots, the motorcycle.
Mm-hmm.
Health fairs, coin shares, coin shows, rabbit shows, Collectors West, and then this weekend we've got the Emblem coming in for a regional meeting. Next weekend we have Fibermania, we have a psychic fair. And then on November 5th, we have the Growers Market is coming back, and they'll be there through mid-March. So that continues to work. We have coming up, we have several Christmas bazaars, one in November. We are actually hosting ourselves the Christmas tree lighting again the weekend of December 4th. And then on the 17th, we're going to also continue with the last minute sale. Flyers have gone out to previous vendors on both of those. For the tree lighting, we had 17 vendors last year. We've already had about 40 people want to come to that. As you know, it's a short period of time, but it's a lot of people in that building all open time. I think we had about 1,000 last time. So
what was December 17th?
It's the last minute sale.
Last minute. Where you have vendors sale. Come in. Mm-hmm. Craft sale.
Yeah, they'll be in the pavilion that day, and then that's the last weekend for the growers market in December as well. So it'll be a busy weekend. Plus, there's a private event going on. Lots of Christmas parties and things have already been booked. So that's going on over in the floral building as well. Arena. And Mary will go into the roof here piece shortly, but continuing to run, last year we reduced the rate of the monthly pass to $30 from $40. We've left that through the summer and through the fall. I don't think I want to see that change. Lots of usage on the arena. I mean, lots. And
is it mostly 4-H or is it horse
and buggy? Oh, no. It's all open. 4-H hasn't even started yet using it. And they'll start using it in November. I think it's the third or fourth Friday of the month. I can't remember, but it's one of those weekends. Been contacted by all the equestrian teams. We've picked up Grants Pass for sure. In the past, they've had one or two people enrolled in that program. She's looking at 5 to 7 this year.
So at each school?
Pardon me?
Is there an equestrian team at all the schools?
Yes.
There is now.
Yeah, there is now. Mm-hmm. And we also do Illinois Valley on Sunday nights. Grants Pass, we're slotting to bring them in early on Sunday mornings. We've had some pushback from our open riding community because every night, Monday night, you'll have like North Valley, you know, and then you'll have Hidden Valley, and then you'll have the Posse is on Wednesday nights, and then Ivy is on Sunday nights. So for night riding, and that's usually when people at work can ride, you know, there's only three nights that it's available. So had a little pushback on that. We have actually had the equestrian teams. They were wanting the arena at 3 or 4. We've gone to 6 o'clock that they come in. If they want to come in and get their horses warmed up before 6 o'clock, we don't have a problem with that. But we've had to leave that arena open for the public till 6. Just to meet the demand, because the demand is definitely there. And now that we're the rain has hit, we will see a lot more open riding happening. And we currently have 8 horses up in the stalls that are permanent boarders right now. We've moved them. We've always had them in the A or B barn for the off season, and we put them over in the very far barn that's right by the RV park, so the camp hosts can actually kind of watch that area. And that's worked real well, and that's a drier barn than the other barns. So the rain and the roof is always an issue on all of these other barns that we have. So we've got that going. And last weekend, I actually saw 7 RVs in the RV park. So, you know, they're coming. You know, they come through and they stay a night or two, and off they go. We've had one of them that was there actually for the 2 full week period that we would allow an RV to stay, because it had to do with Asante and they were getting medical treatment over there. So there's a lot of different reasons that people are using our RV park. And the BMX track, as you know, is currently being moved. Lots of dirt. I think they have more dirt than what they need. But
they'll use it all. They really will use it all.
Oh, I'm hoping. Amazing. I'm hoping, because there's an awful lot of dirt over there right now. And then at the fair board, we had at our last meeting, as you well know, we had a proposal from Dutch Brothers about the infield, and we're continuing on that discussion. I know that they will be coming to you shortly to get on the agenda to give a presentation to the commissioners. That's their next stop. They had a lot of legwork to do as far as you know, they were talking about a regulation soccer field and then possibly two warm-up fields, and they were getting information on the turf and what everything was going to cost, because part of their proposal that was very attractive to the fair board, not only would it beautify the whole area completely, but it would be a year-round use of that facility as well. And it would be a huge boost to horse racing to have that out there as a beautiful area. And so there's just lots of discussion of that going on right now. As you know, it's not a done deal. It's still in the infancy stages. And I always caution everyone, just remember, you know, as we move forward, we have to look for the betterment of the community. So
my question on that is, does it affect things that you would have there, like tough trucks and all of that stuff?
It does. It does affect the tough trucks. If we can keep it, rodeos and things like that, keeping them on the, we can keep those on the track. And if there's anything that tough trucks can do inside the indoor arena, because that has actually come to me already from a group that they would like to do an event with tough trucks in the arena, the indoor arena, that's an option for that.
Is it big enough for that?
Yeah, we've had them before, as long as it's not really huge. But remembering that, or maybe you're not aware of it, and I'm sure you are, but part of that is we sat down with them. They did a lot of legwork with us to find out about what these different events were going to bring into our facility. And part of their ongoing...
They meaning Dutch Brothers.
Dutch Brothers, yes. They being Dutch Brothers. And we figured that it would be between right about $50,000 that we would be losing if we did not have the tough truck type events there. And looking at Friday and Saturday affair as well, we'd have to backfill it with something else. And part of their initial proposal to us in the preliminary draft stages was that they would also give the fairgrounds $50,000 a year for 10 years to help offset that cost. So that was quite attractive to us, to the fair board. So that would help with that.
That would also allow us to put money aside if we need to make repairs to the grandstands, to do different things that we need to do. That's also, fixing up the grandstand is also a piece.
Of their
proposal.
Piece, yes. Their piece was...
Upgrade the grandstand, which definitely...
Upgrade the grandstands. They have talked to horse racing. I have not been privy to that conversation, but rumor has it that they also have granted some money to fix the paddocked area already, beyond what we're talking about completely. So I know that horse racing is excited about their partnership as well. But it'll just make a beautiful background for them. The Friends of the Fair bingo is struggling and has been struggling. When they seem to have meals, they have a bigger attendance. And the fair board is going to be meeting on November for a workshop before a board meeting and actually sitting down. That is on part of the agenda will be because I have to have the building back at full price somehow because we're renting it almost every weekend and my labor costs to set up for bingo after a Saturday night to have it ready Sunday morning, labor is always one of my very biggest expenses. And I'm having to bring in extras to get it set up really fast, ready to go. And I truly need to have revenue from that facility. If it's going to be used twice a week and my guys have got to set it up and tear it down, then there's got to be some compensation for that. We've allowed it to go for a year. That was part of the deal that we'd look at it after a year. The fair board is going to look at it in November. And I did go and talk to Larry McMichaels already from the Friends of the Fair. He is the treasurer. Bill Reinhardt is the president, and I have told them both that we're going to look at a different rent schedule depending on what happens. So I've given that notice. Last minute sale. Last year we had 48 booth spaces, and we probably have a third of them full already. Casa Amiga will be there, and that's definitely moving forward. Talk to you a little bit about the Fair Board workshop. A couple other topics on that will be Fair Board governance and what it means to be on the Fair Board and what your expectations are. You know, we have to have some boots on the ground type pieces to this. And I don't know that that's been instilled as much as it needs to be, but the Fair absolutely needs the Fair Board to be active. And I know that we've got some terms coming up. I think that that's something that you all are going to have to look at. But I think all that needs to be in consideration. The main topic is, though, the long-term planning of the fair and the fairgrounds, at least for 3 years out, what we're seeing as far as expectations, how to make it grow, how to make it pay for itself. And the really important piece of that is going to be obviously expense and budgeting, and it needs to go building by building. It's sitting there. What are we doing about these buildings? Not only are there several buildings over in the horse racing area that are temporary that Ryan would like to see removed that belong to us. We do not use them for absolutely anything. Horse racing uses them, and the other consideration would be is to have horse racing actually take them over and put in a standard to how they need to be maintained, and if not, his direction would be is to remove them. Mm-hmm. His direction also is, we've had a long, hard talk about the host house. We're not done with that yet, but we have to look at that building as well. Currently, the roof is sliding off of it, and Ryan is not real excited about putting anything back into
that
building.
The big house. The big house. Flower building.
Yep. And so we're looking at the long term of that building as well. And then grants, I'm going to let Mary talk about that. But when we talk about budget, I have Arthur back here behind. I've been to Arthur more than once lately to have discussion about budget and what we're doing and where we're at and where we're going. Amazingly enough, after a really, really tough fair, we are actually $30,000 to the good right now for the whole program, okay, for everything. The grounds. Oh, no, not from the fair. From the grounds.
The fairgrounds.
The fairgrounds as a whole.
Of which the fair represents a portion.
Yes, they do. But after everything was all said and done, we feel like we're still about 40% off of what we were last year. What that means to, and it was pretty much across the board. I mean, the gate was down about $42,000 from last year, just the physical gate. Mm-hmm. We haven't seen, oh, I'm jumping ahead. Let me go through this a little bit. As far as the income pieces go for fair, and I'm talking about basically fair now, you know, parking was just about even. Carnival was down about $10,000 from last year. And it would have been down more if we wouldn't have redone their contract. In the past, they were only giving us 27.5% of the pre-sale amount of tickets. And that is not really the industry standard. The industry standard is that you do whatever the regular percentage is. And it's, ours happens to be 35%. And so in the contract, we asked for 35% of the pre-sale. So that gave us a couple extra $1,000. So that helped buffer it a little bit. But it was pretty much across the board. You know, the food vendors were down just about half of what they were because the people weren't there. We did find in doing this, we've gone through the budget. I've had Mary look at it. I've looked at it. We found some corrections and things that needed to happen from the very first shock that we had. And part of what we had of the property reserve fund was actually set and was coming out of fairgrounds. So if you didn't think it looked bad to start with, it really looked good when we first saw it.
$43,000.
Yeah, $43,000. And actually, it was about $60,000. And Arthur found that and got that changed around. And then in this run, I was off $8,400. I just absolutely couldn't figure out why in rental for the for sale of materials, why I was up so far in admin services. It was because the percentage that we got for the beer and wine and that type of thing was actually put up into admin services. So that was another $8,400 that went back down into the fair just in the last couple of days. So that made that shock not quite so hard. And vendors, we were down just about half. Reimbursements, we were up from Young Farmers from last year, but that was because they reimburse us back for the tents that they use for their event when they do their dinner at noontime during the sale. And so the only reason that was up from last year was because they now are charging trip charges from Noel Leslie, and it was over $500. So actually, it was almost six. I think it was $590. And so that was up. Sponsorships was up, though. That was a good thing. Last year, we got cash sponsorships were right about $12,000. This year, we were about $36,000. So that changed a little bit as far as just definitely, you know, how we looked at it. And part of the money was reallocated, too, on that, in fairness, of how we looked at the grounds. Because in the past, we took some of the Wheeler sponsorship and it went up into admin. And we did still a partial up there, but we had a $5,000 more sponsorship from them. And we're, for this year moving forward, I've already met with the three new possible sponsors that are fairly substantial, that could be fairly substantial. And so we're moving forward on that. When it's all said and done, in looking compared to last year, it looks like our numbers are going to be just about 60,000 off for fair itself. And but the good news is for the quarter, we're 30,000 up. So, yeah, it's just how it's going to all shake through.
And that actually is with your, I think you're even.
Yeah,
with your,
I'm just
with your beginning cash.
I am. Yeah. I'm at, so I am.
The quarter is
And to take all of that into consideration and comparisons and all those other things, as abysmally impacting was the fair event.
Oh yeah.
None of that droppage and all those were because of us. It was because of the weather.
Right. Oh, it was all weather.
And you know, you stop and you realize, if that had not been, how big would have been the positive? And that should be an encouragement. Mm-hmm. Also, to me, it's a tremendous encouragement that when you get all done, you're still 30,000 in the black on this mm-hmm. whole thing, mm-hmm. and that. That to me, for you and the Fair Board, that ought to be a tremendous encouragement to realize.
Wow. It's amazing that we've broken even for the first quarter.
It truly is amazing. The other thing that was good, bad but good, is that we're only about at our budget for expenses for fair. We ran right about 85% of what we had budgeted. Mm-hmm. So we didn't use everything we had available to us. And thank goodness we didn't.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, everything was set in place. The heat just killed us.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they were three record-breaking days, as you know. And truly no one in their right mind would have gone at 111 if you didn't have to. And but still, there were people on the grounds. I don't know that I could produce a bench a second, but Friday, the gate was right at $25,000, and that was the $111, the 100-degree day. So, and that's just at the gate that day. So, I mean, there's so many things that you've got to look at. You've got to look at last year's, and that's what I tried to target everything off of. We have to look at last year's. We've got to look at the budget, percent to budget. I mean, everything plays out, and then I panic and go to Arthur. And he calms me down when you really look at it. And when I'm saying that we're 60,000 off, that's not including payroll that it really took to put that on. So, you know, there's different ways to look at it. So in looking at it with payroll department and the other, because my payroll comes out of admin services, but I also get cell tower money and, you know, other things into there, and so it kind of balances it back out. So,
well,
I've been very fortunate.
Pleasantly surprised after Friday's Hades event that the auction on Saturday was
the biggest ever,
and more than the previous years.
Right.
And that was, you talk about community support for that event,
right.
Man.
It was about 416,
yes.
Somewhere in there. I can give it to her later what it is exactly, mm-hmm. but it's about 416,000.
376, I think.
395, I think.
No, it didn't go that high.
Yeah.
From 67 to 76.
Okay.
They added some, so.
But it was, you know, it was phenomenal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, all in all, we're hanging out.
We're still in the black, and you know, we just have to continue with events, things like that. Yeah. So.
Okay, my back to my question on the arena.
Yes, I'll let Mary
The arena is obviously used by a lot of groups and schools and the sheriff's posses and all of that. How much is the estimated cost to fix up the arena? I know it needs what, electricity, and needs a roof, right?
Mm-hmm.
How much is that?
It needs a roof, a new roof. We just had a meeting with Ryan, last week?
Mm-hmm.
And an actual new roof on that arena is probably in the neighborhood of $250,000 to do it. And what we've decided to do is, because it's $250,000, we're going to actually try to fix some of the understructure things, like a better viewing area for the handicapped. That's one thing that needs to do. We need to shore up some of the seating areas underneath and do some safety issues. So we decided to do the safety issues first. Going to try it for the Rotary grant for that. But with that Rotary grant, Mike Hagan is connected with RCC, with the construction department guy at RCC. And he's actually in Fresno right now, but he's contacting him. We just talked about this 2 days ago. He's contacting him to see if we can partner with the RCC group. Ryan is on board with this. And see if we can get them to do some of the labor things. And we don't know what the possibilities are yet there. But we'll start with that. We also know that the roof is going to have plastic. To put new plastic
today.
On the roof. Yeah, it needs it today. They only plastic half of the roof at this point. We may have to plastic the whole roof. It's $3,200 roughly to put the plastic on each year. So for right now, we've decided that for the next 2 or 3 years, we may just have to use the plastic. It lasts a year and go from there because it's so. And that gives us time to get a plan together for the whole arena. What are we going to do with the arena? And then write grants, because you know how long out you have the grant things are, to see if we can actually get somebody to do that roof. And one of the proposals that Ryan had, and I think it's a good one, maybe we tear the whole roof off and put a regular roof on it instead of that big barrel. The big barrel is what's costing us a lot of money. So we've been talking about different things to shore it up, but for right now we're doing the patching thing sort of with the plastic each year, but it still gives it a dry place and protects the understructure of it. We need to really go under there, and if we can get this partnership with the RCC group and see if we can maybe do some of the understructure and the things that need to be done safety-wise with them. I don't know that. I think Rotary will be more likely to grant us stuff if we have a partner like that, because then it's an educational event as well.
Okay, my question, what Rotary grant are you speaking of?
The community grant, the duck thing for next year.
For the duck race?
Mm-hmm. It's going to be probably roughly $75,000. Just to do, because there's a lot of seating and different things in there. Might have to take out some of the seating to make it more fire hazard compatible, so that they can have room to walk between some of the areas. So it's things that we're looking at with Ryan right now.
The other thing that Ryan talked about is we talked about what we could tear down and bring it back as a pole building and build it as you can. I know for a fact that in Umatilla County they're looking at that right now, and an indoor arena is somewhere around $3 million. If you do it properly and you do it as a multi-use facility and you have the bleachers that come in and out and you can change the floors and things like that, you're looking at about $5 million, just roughly, because I've called and asked. And I have what their plans are. I actually have the physical set of plans from Umatilla County, just because they have gone around and done a lot of legwork already. So it was nice to be able to have them share that with
us. You could pay for that, couldn't you?
Sure.
Sure.
Okay. I'll help you. Can we afford that? No. I mean, we. So to fix the facility that we have is not as expensive as $5 million. But, you know, it's probably going to be, by the time we put indoor things, upgrade some things, put a roof on it, it's going to be probably close to $1 million by the time we do it all.
The other thing that has come out is looking at the arena long term. If it was just a hair larger, it would be really good. The one thing that has come out is possibly removing the pins at the west end that are underneath the posse room, removing those pens and possibly removing the structure up above it where the posse room is. I'm not saying remove the posse room, but if change that around a little bit. And so you have full use of that full end. The other thing that's come out is to possibly look at the south side of it and maybe take out some of the seating a few rows back and open up that side to make it a little bit wider. If it was just a little bit wider, it would really, really be beneficial to the horse community. So that also came up in the discussion with Ryan. He also talked about what it would take to tear it down and put it back together. And
he's going to actually core sample the roof to see if there's asbestos and different things like that that we'd have to deal with if we decide to tear it off.
That may be the whole game changer.
Mm-hmm. Because you'd be spending $100,000 for the disposition asbestos.
Yeah. Right.
So anyway, that's the thing we had with him, so that he's going to core sample it and find out what's in it.
I mean, if there is, in one sense, but if there is, that you are now, that has now opened up granting opportunities that can't even think about it this time, because there's money's available for that removal of asbestos and that kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, is Walt still the primary grant writer?
No, it's me.
You are the primary grant writer. Okay.
Walter is my...
He's your resource.
He's my mentor.
Yeah.
Yes,
okay,
I work with Walter a lot.
And I don't... Having gotten out of that business, in one sense, I'm not on the cutting edge of what's going on as far as foundations go. I know, like, Ford Family has changed our whole focus to a certain degree. They've changed it. But to get a... it sounds terrible, but I hate to nickel and dime that if you can get a grant for $500,000 from Collins Foundation or foundations that are large enough that give those kinds of grants.
Well, there's Ford, there's Oregon Community Foundation, there's probably the Meyer Trust. There's a couple of different Meyer ones.
Right.
But there's some fairly good sized ones. Some of them don't do government grants.
Yeah, I really do.
I don't know exactly what's out there for asbestos.
You can get a lot of those through, we're going to get one from up here. That was the state, wasn't it? Was it the state?
Yeah.
Because it's in the public interest to get rid of it and dispose of it properly.
Okay.
And so that isn't always a private grant. That's a
state
grant,
yeah.
When it's a public facility. Lots of times they make money available for the disposition of asbestos.
Okay.
Yeah. That's what we did at the
event. So we're working, to answer your question, I guess, we're working on the arena and we're trying to work a plan, a longer range plan, to see what's best. You know, what does it cost to tear it down if we decide to tear it down and get rid of all whatever might be in there? Or do we fix it? Do we cover it? Do we take that roof off, which would still, if there's asbestos in it, would still be something that we'd have to get rid of? Do we change the roof structure?
Mm-hmm.
It is built out of timbers that are huge, straight wood. I mean, it's a pretty beefy arena when it was built in the 50s. They had, all that lumber. So, but we're working on that because, and I'll go through the other buildings and what we're doing on the other buildings and what we've done in the last quarter for certain on the other buildings. But that's the thing we need to turn to next, kind of. So I'll go through just a quick thing, and I don't know if you've been out there, but in the floral building, we actually asked for $45,500 in grants. We were granted $28,500 of those grants. And working with Ryan, who had some of his guys come in, we painted the interior of the floral building. It's all light color now. Upgraded the tiles in the ceilings, upgraded the light covers, put in new countertops in the kitchens, which Ryan actually did that, put in new sinks in the kitchens that are bigger so that you can dump a hot coffee pot without splattering everywhere. So it got a real facelift, and we were able to get, with the Rotary money, we were able to buy 230 new padded chairs, so it has new padded chairs in there. We bought tables for that last year, the conference-sized tables, the 18-inch size tables. Because we didn't get all the money that we wanted and we're not quite finished yet, we have money to paint the roof on the outside, but it was either too hot and now it's raining, and Ryan's having trouble finding somebody that will paint the roof. So that's still part of the grant money that's doing. So that
What's
building
the material
is
going to be. On the roof?
It's metal.
Metal.
It's metal. Yeah, it's all metal. So once the roof gets painted, that'll be, you know, a nicer looking building, certainly on the outside. But inside is certainly not the gray bricks that, you know, we've seen for the prison look. And so the weddings and the different things that are, the venues that are in there are appreciative of what we've already done in that building. So that one's pretty much up to date. Of course, arts and crafts we already had, you know, did the things and singles in there. And it's actually renting out pretty well, too. I'd like to still paint the interior of that building, but, you know, we don't have a lot of money. In the commercial building, Ryan has an idea in the commercial building that on the south side, the roof will actually be the cover. So they've framed in, walk in the, you'll only see part of it through the little windows, but now you can't even see that because we had plastic put on the windows for the storm that's coming yesterday, tomorrow, or whenever it's coming. They've made an entryway, and there'll be double doors inside. So I think it's 12 feet inside for the first bays. So we'll go into the bays, and they'll be able to go into the inside, and then we'll have two long bays on the side, the first bays in, so that they'll still be usable.
But they will in reality be outside.
No, they won't. We've decided to close those in.
Oh, okay.
We just changed it yesterday, actually, because we already had a long bay on one side, and there was two bays on this side. So if we cut the dividers out between the two bays, we'll have two long bays, and then both make usable bays out of them. And they'll be enclosed so that the people can't be sleeping in them or whatever. Yeah. I mean, and we still, even with a 12-foot entryway, may have some of that, but that's Terry's job or whoever goes around and getting them out. They'll be sitting under the rain, I'm sure, or nothing.
Oh, homeless people. You know, I did some research on some things that cities are using to keep people from doing that, and there are actually lights and sound type things that become annoying, and They actually work. They put them underneath the eaves of buildings where they would have trouble with people coming. They would come in, and there are certain kinds of music and certain kinds of lights that people will not stay. It's annoying. And
that's an interesting concept.
Yeah. And also, there are certain kinds of seats that you put inside those areas that prevent people from sleeping on the floor, but they don't sit there very long either because they're not comfortable. So I got a lot of that information. I think I gave it away though. I sent a lot of it to Ryan because we were having so much trouble with the cave junction lately. And check that out. And what it is for, I can't remember how I researched it, whether it was preventing loitering or preventing building something. I can't remember what it was. I just Googled it all, and in an hour I found a whole lot of things. And because lots of times the trouble with people sleeping in there is that it's, you know, they lay down on the floor or they lay down on a bench or whatever, but there are certain kinds of, a lot of them are very artistic looking, some of them are artwork type of things, but it makes it so no one can lay down and sleep in there. They can't get behind it, they can't sit on it, they can't get comfortable, in other words.
That would be it.
Yeah.
Anyway, so and Mike Hagan is the contractor on that, and Justin Earp is actually the framer that's doing the framing inside, and they're working there as much as they can. Between their other projects, Mike is actually working for free, and Justin is working at a reduced price, and they're trying to get at least that building done for $20,000. That, you know, trying to stay under the budget of $20,000 for that building, because we still have two other buildings or the other two things to go.
Mm-hmm.
On the east side, it's all closed in for right now. So I'm not sure which way Ryan wants to go next, because there's also something on the north side that needs to be pulled back in, or something. Safety thing on the north side, and they've done some things to kind of hold it in, but it's not finished yet. Anyway, So the commercial building is coming, it's moving along. It should be ready for Peggy's growers market by the 1st of November, and that's when they'll be moving into that building. So, but it should be, should have the entryway. They'll have to cut out, there's three big windows in there, and like I said, for this storm that's coming in, they put plastic over it. So, but they're going to have to cut out that that entry part and figure out what they're going to do there. So, but Ryan's working on that as well. In fact, we're meeting Ryan out there this afternoon to talk about it some more. And Peggy mentioned that we're going out to Playcraft because we got money from Rotary for children's things and from Arthur Dubbs Foundation. We got $1,400, I think it was, from Rotary and $700 and something from the Dubbs Foundation. So we're going out to get our first piece of playground equipment on order from Playcraft. So we're buying local and visit with them a little bit. And then we talked about the Rotary grant, what my idea is for seeing if, like I said, if we can do a partnership with somebody that makes it an educational piece and helps us as well, you know, I think it's a win-win if we can do it. And I don't know if Rotary will, you know, even consider it, but at least it's something. If they don't, Walmart just came out with several million dollars worth that they're going to do in communities and some things of an educational grant type thing, so I may look at that one, so...
The application deadline for the Rotary grant is
15, when? November 15th. Okay. Yeah, so I've got a little time. We need to make the connection with the RCC guy, get something kind of between us and see what we can do. But anyway, Ryan and Mike are both in that loop with me, so, and Peggy. So we still have paint in for the inside of the pavilion building. We have 30 gallons of paint that was donated by Home Depot. We just have to find a group to paint it. Kiwanis was going to paint it, but they discovered that kids can't paint indoors. There's something right. about kids painting indoors with not enough ventilation or something. So even though we open everything, it's anyway, they can't do it.
The upkeepers just talked about that the other day, and I believe that they're going to yeah. take part of that on at least.
Okay, well, so we have the paint to spruce up the inside of the pavilion as well. So that's,
brushers.
Yeah, rollers and brushers, that's all we need. Terry and I may end up spray painting. I don't know. Anyway. And then the arena we talked about. So,
and my last word is the electronic message board, the inside guest that we borrowed the money from the county from. The first phase of it will be starting to be installed next Monday. So we're pretty excited about that. John is bringing out a computer for us before Friday for that. That's all set up, ready to go. We had to coordinate with IT as well as with BOM to be sure that the electricity meets all the standards, which it does. It's ready to go. ER Electric was out yesterday. So that is getting ready to go. And then I've had indication, not final indication, but 99% indication that I have sold the whole reader board for somewhere around $90,000. So it'll fluctuate a little bit on the way the proposal was written. It went out to four different groups. And it depends on what the ending licenses are, the fees, or if we have to have another permit now for the top. Because when we got our permit, it did not include the top. So now that's going to come into play. But there's plenty of electricity there for that sign for all of our phases. And then the second phase is the top. Once we know it's signed on the line. And then the bottom can will be going back to Blaze Signs in Medford on Monday. They're taking off that whole bottom can piece of it. It'll go back. They're going to clean it up and retrofit it. I told them hang tight because if I've sold the whole sign, that will be the sponsor piece that will go then over on the pavilion on the side of the building so people can see it for that sponsor of who has bought the sign. And it's for a 4-year proposal. So... that appears that it's sold. I'm pretty sure it's sold.
Okay.
I've had an email that said it was sold and a verbal, but I wanted to sign my proposal.
Mm-hmm.
So I haven't seen that yet.
Signature.
I wanted in writing. So yeah. That's what we have.
Thank you.
So, yeah, I mean, when you, especially you look
now
back.
Now I just work for free.
But you look back. 4 years ago, 5 years ago, whatever it was.
4 years ago.
And you realize...
We've come a long way, baby.
And And how much of that, you know, if you bore the brunt of that load to see it change, the whole atmosphere change to where these things are even possible?
Yeah, yeah. Even 2 years ago, we wouldn't have had the possibilities that we have today.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
It's good.
Thank you.
All right.
Thank you very much. Okay. Our financial guru. Wake up back there. No, I'm kidding.
Mr. Curmudgeon.
Hello.
Finance report, proposed fee changes, etc.
Okay. Yeah. This is exciting stuff.
Yeah.
Just take a deep breath. We'll get through. So the main thing, before I start the fee proposal, I wanted to mention that the McKenzie grant applications are due today for, or a grant request for the McKenzie Trust are due today. I've seen one, and I've heard one or two others should be coming in today. So the due date is today, 4 o'clock, in the board's office, McKenzie Trust. I did want to mention the possibility, we were talking about a PERS presentation to the weekly business session with the most recent issues with legal counsel and job counsel and the PERS board. I think our rates are in fluctuation, so we don't know exactly what our new PERS rates are going to be. So I'd like to make that presentation, defer that until we know. Mm-hmm. What PERS is going to decide on our rate impact from the job council, or the debt from the job council, if that works out okay. I think it'd be better to be able to say what's going on rather than saying, well, we're not sure. Mm-hmm. Here's PERS, but we're not sure.
We're not sure. Yeah,
yeah. That ought to make
it's
everybody
the last thing,
feel warm and fuzzy on that one.
Oh boy.
So then in your packet you'll find the fee proposals. We back on September 15th I sent out the notice to all department managers and budget officers that we're beginning our annual fee proposal process. So any fee changes, any new fees that you want to implement, they needed to be to the finance office by October 5th, and I would compile them and present them at today's admin meeting. The goal for today is to, the board, so the department managers have discussed with their liaisons any of the fee changes, also with the boards, their associated advisory boards, so like, Sarah with Parks, talked with the Parks board, I believe that, to make any changes there. So those things should have already taken place, and the presentation today is hopefully the board will say let's move this forward to the weekly business session, and at the weekly business session then we'll have the first order for first reading of the order for a public hearing. Mm-hmm. Order to have a public hearing for the reading of the new fees and changes in fees. You'll notice that a lot of the fees are variations on what already exists. I think for the animal shelter, if you want me to give a brief rundown on all the fees, the animal shelter, they're trying to align their fees with some of the rabies vaccinations since they have 2 or 3 year vaccinations. They felt that their licenses ought to be coincide with those rather than having come back year after year.
Are you done with the animal shelter?
Correct.
Are you done with the animal shelter?
Sure. Okay, I'm done.
I mean, to me, if I'm looking at this and you see no current fee, for a dog license. This proposed fee is $38.
Yeah. What they're doing is they're substituting what used to be an annual fee. Now they're recognizing that some of these animals don't have to come back every year for a new license, because what the license is actually doing is ensuring that you have the proper vaccinations for your animal.
Mm-hmm.
And those vaccinations are 2 or 3 year vaccinations. So why not align the licensing process with the length of time that the vaccination takes place?
Mm-hmm.
So they have an annual license right now, but what they're doing is wanting to implement a 2 year license or a 3 year license, so that the owners don't have to bring them back and say, yeah, the rabies shot I got last year is still good. You know, it's a 3 years rabies shot, so yeah, it's still good. So they'll get a 3 year license that coincides with their 3 year rabies shot and other.
That's what we do. We get a 3 year shot on our dog, but they have to send me a renewal every year, even though I've already complied. Yeah.
Right. So that's what they're trying to do. The other thing on the licensing fees is they're recognizing that they're getting in more than just dogs and cats. So they have smaller animals, gerbils, guinea pigs, rabbits, things that are not your traditional
llamas.
Yeah, pets. And also livestock. So they've had several this year, or I shouldn't say several, but they had five within the last year. Five, I guess that counts. That horses, llamas, roosters, things that are not your traditional pets. And so they wanted to establish a fee of what within that framework of the animal hoarding issue, you know, what do we do with all these livestock animals that are not traditional pets? So they're establishing just some fees for those too.
Now I'm done. With a lot of discretion in that. It's 5 to 250, so you know, if they have a goat and they want to adopt the goat out, it's $10 or something, or the horse that they've had to take care of and keep groomed and maybe have to have its feet taken care of, which is expensive, $250. So they decide that based on what the animal is.
Right.
Which they don't have currently.
Oh, geez.
You want to go adopt a horse? I
think
they got another goat this week. There's a goat out there.
Yeah, thanks. Just funny. We'll save more in the backyard. If the philosophy of a dog license or a whatever, altered or unaltered, is to encourage people to primarily make sure that animal has got his rabies shot,
mm-hmm.
and then also to have a license. And if that whole process is going to cost me round figures, $20 a year, what percentage of animals do we have now that are unlicensed in the county? I mean, I would imagine the percentage is fairly high. And they only have to pay if they get caught. How can it be motivate people to license their animal? But if I'm looking at, I can run the risk, I've got an unaltered Irish wolfhound.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to pay $116. Dogs do fly and chickens bark. I don't know how supportive that is of trying to make changes.
If you can afford to feed an Irish wolfhound, you can afford $100.
I let him wander on your property and take your food. I'm just saying, it's just...
Well, I think the theory behind the multi-year license is to make it more convenient for pet owners, and therefore more convenience would bring about more compliance.
Mm-hmm.
That's the theory, or that's the intent behind the change here. The other thing is that good questions, legitimate questions, and I also want to say that with the board, One of the purposes behind this meeting today is to bring out these kinds of questions and to bring out this kind of information so that if we want to, we have a little bit of time to say, let's follow up and let's have that discussion. So if it's the board's desire, we can look at specific fees or specific departments and say, next Thursday, let's go over this particular fee. Or if you,
yeah,
of course, you want
though,
to do it on your own, too, that's fine.
You don't have to buy a three-year. You can pay for a two-year, which is $20 or $18 or something. So I just did my dog.
Well, $116 is for unaltered also. So
right. So, you know, these are fees that they're adding them because they're adding a three-year option. They're not eliminating the one-year option, which is already there. You can pay your $20. And
such a deal.
Yeah.
So if you want a discount, you can pay 3 years, which I will do. We get a break on it.
Small animal surrender. If a person has a dog or, you know, I mean, you've got your Chihuahua, and you realize now, a year and a half later, this is a dumb decision, and you want to surrender it, I don't know the advantage that we're going to charge you $15 to surrender your animal. I mean, because then that just simply means I'm going to let the animal go. Mm-hmm. I will leave them in the vicinity of the animal shelter, or I'm going to leave them in the vicinity of Upper River Road someplace.
I believe that happens, yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know. If a person wants to surrender the animal, I'm not sure why the necessity of having to pay to surrender the animal is there. Usually the reason people are even thinking about surrendering the animal, is because they can't afford to keep this thing. Mm-hmm. So the last thing that they need is an additional fee to surrender this animal that they can't afford to keep in the first place. My 1.5 cents is going down.
You can take it to the Humane Society, they'll take it.
Yeah. I suppose, you know, if the question is...
Because they charge a fee also, by the way.
Yeah, if it should be free to surrender an animal, or whether, I mean, is there some kind of social conscience going on here that if you really want your animal to be taken care of and maybe adopted out rather than just...
It's cheaper to pay $15 than to feed the animal for the next week.
Yeah.
That's a difficulty because there are... You know, whether I like it or not, okay, there are people who have animals and they abuse them. Mm-hmm. And then, okay, then we're not talking about those people. We're talking about somebody who's got their favorite little pet, mm-hmm. and they just can't afford it anymore. They can't do this. And so,
I don't think this is specifically references dogs and cats. I think these are other animals. We don't have the full fee structure here to see the other. So I'm not sure what dog and cat surrender are.
Well, I mean, small animal surrender. I'm assuming small animal would include dog.
Rabbits, gerbils, those kinds of things. Those
cats.
I think there's separate fees for cats and dog surrender.
Well, I don't know why there would be any fee associated with it. If you want to surrender your animal, I don't know why there would be a cost to do that.
It costs us money when they do.
Oh, I realize that. So we can pass an ordinance that you cannot adopt an animal unless you can demonstrate a 10-year financial viability. No.
I don't know. That sounds like a good idea.
Yeah. But to say, we see people walking around all the time with primarily dogs on a leash.
Yeah, they got in a fight right out there during our 100th anniversary
celebration. That's right.
Yes.
It wasn't a fight. It was a bull that took out a little Chihuahua. That's what it was.
Bad.
Poor little thing. Anyway.
Bad owner.
Just go to 4000 Clover Lawn and just drop them off there.
Yeah. People come out to our road and drop them off.
Yeah, and, you know, so, okay.
We adopt them.
Why not let them drop them off at the animal shelter rather than doing that?
Mm-hmm.
Because
mm-hmm.
they can't pay $15 or they can't, whatever, just... I just don't know why if you're going to surrender an animal, I don't know why we would have a...
So I will forward that question on to our animal shelter director, and we'll see what the response can be.
Okay.
So,
seems to be we reduced that fee a couple, last time. The fee was 25 or something, and then we reduced it.
I think they did for the dogs and cats.
Mm-hmm.
And also changed from the per cat or per dog, you know,
to
accommodate a litter of, mm-hmm. of animals also.
Right.
Again, with the intent of helping to make it easier, get better compliance. So, those kinds of. The assessor submitted change to their partition plat processing fee, gave some comparisons, so I think we're in line with what some of the other counties charge for that.
Are these comparable counties with it?
Well, you know, I'm not so sure. Benton, you know, they're...
That's right.
Building safety... Of course, they're more or less regulated through state guidelines, but anyway, they're submitting a change of fees for their structural, mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and they give both a letter of support and the average cost, saying that they've been losing money or spending down their fund balance over the last several years, which indeed they have,
mm-hmm.
and so this would help offset some of that. Still not... well, they're a self-supporting fund, so they have to bring in enough fees. They don't receive general fund or any other county support.
Fortunately, they have had an excess of money available to them
yes.
from prior years that
yes.
has allowed them to go these mm-hmm. several years
mm-hmm.
not charging the cost of the license.
And as they say in their justification letter, it's been several years that these fees have not been looked at. No other fee increases have been established since 1993. They say the Building Safety Division had a structural fee increase for other inspections and an increase from $13 to $42 in 2014. But no other fee increases since 1993. So it's time.
No kidding.
Community development, our community development director, Julie Schmelzer, went over some of these in her presentation. Mm-hmm. So I think those are there. The parks department, I think those have been part of a discussion that's been ongoing to a lot of their fees, you'll see, are actually rounded down in parks from what they currently are, like Griffin Park, $81 down to $75. So they're both trying to get rid of the dollar bills that come through by making them even dollar amounts and also better reflecting costs. So parks. Public Works, again, their fees are... for more or less self-supporting. They're trying to get up. I think part of Public Works has been a gradual increase to try to reach the 100% of cost. And right now I think they're at they're going from the 40% range to try to get it closer to an 80% at this time. So that's their... background on some of their fees.
There's got to be some sort of studies mm-hmm. done that show. I mean, because the idea is saying our fee has been $25, and the cost of doing a business is $28, so we're going to raise it to $30.
Mm-hmm.
Well, then the cost of doing it goes to $33 because of. Yeah, and just
charging you more money.
Yeah, we're charging more
for
money.
The fee.
And the difficulty is that you know where does that where does this measurable horse stop?
Mm-hmm.
And
well, part of that circular reasoning on some of these things. Part of that is also that we're saying that we will no longer pay for these things through general property tax dollars mm-hmm. or any kind of general fund support that. You departments have to be totally self-supporting, and the only place they can get their money is through fees. Of course, in Public Works, you have gas tax for the road maintenance and construction fees, bridge and road maintenance. But But for these types of permits for driveway approaches, subdivision applications, they need to be self-supporting. But you'll see some of them are going down also, or are below. I shouldn't say going down. Some of them are still below cost. They're trying to get closer to cost, but recognizing that what you just said, how you can have too much of an increase, and then it becomes.
Well, I think by doing it gradually, it's easier for people to understand that you're moving in a direction, but you're not going to suddenly go from, you know, $45 to $245.
Right. They're trying to
hit.
They're trying to get, but like the subdivision, you know, cost of providing service $440, proposed fee is $360. So they're trying to move closer, but not necessarily overpriced.
The current fee is $1,350, and the proposed fee is going to be $2,700.
Right.
Or
that,
the current fee is $260, and proposed to be $520.
Yeah.
That's a rather humongous jump.
Well, and look though at the current revenue. You know.
Well, I understand that.
They're looking at one or two of these things
right.
every couple of years.
So let's get them on the camera.
That's right. While they're here, let me see your wallet. So. They're pretty infrequent, so they're trying to capture the costs of what it takes to actually provide that level of service. Still underneath what their estimated cost is for an average. They also have, as you're aware, that they also have, if the developer requests, they can get a refund based on actual cost. So they've had a... Which again, these happen so infrequently every so many years. Most of the developers realize that the cost is exceeding what they paid in their permit. But I think Rob said there was one several years back that actually took advantage of that provision and said, "What would you know? Give me an accounting for the actual cost," and they received a refund on their permit fee. So that provision. Still exists already in the public works fee structure.
And the sheriff's office,
yeah.
They have, is that assessed to the inmate?
Correct. Correct. And what it does is it covers, they used to have you know, a booking fee, a toiletry fee, a storage fee. But what they're saying is that since everybody uses, not the storage, but the bracelet, you know, the identification
hand
bracelet. Taser fee. So, yeah, they have the... So what they're saying is that everybody gets one. Why have all these separate fees? Cover it all, one fee, call it a booking fee.
So does theoretically Jimmy John have to pay a buck to get out? I mean, theoretically. Is that the idea?
It depends on, I mean, they, a lot, if the inmates have money on them, then it's assessed against the inmate account. As the inmate is incarcerated, they many times get money from their family, friends, relatives, to help pay for various items, toiletries, things of that nature. So that's what this fee would be assessed against.
Because I have a real visceral response to this. Adding, fining inmates for being inmated. I just...
Well, we got rid of that.
Yeah, and that's just part of the community cost.
What the sheriff says is that they take revenue from this fee is put into the commissary fund, which is used on theoretically on behalf of the inmates, you know, to help pay. So they have the toiletry pack, the wristband. This is what the fee is supposed to cost, paid for. This the commissary fund pays for these things. Toiletry packs, wristbands for identification. They do a mugshot and prints when they're booking. So So that's what the fee is supposed to cover, to help cover the costs of those particular items provided to the inmate for their comfort, I guess.
Provided. Well, I don't want it. You're going to pay it anyway.
Yeah, you're going to pay it anyway.
Because we're providing.
You know how comfortable those bunks are?
Yeah. Or the toiletry pack, I suppose, and those are needed.
Thank you.
You're welcome, Mike. And so, and then the final one is the county surveyor. The surveyor is interesting. Their general fund, they're taking about $40,000 out of the general fund. Approximately half of their budget is, and so they're raising their fees by about $10,000, $13,000, raising their fees to get about $13,000 worth of additional revenue over the course of the year. It's a nominal effect on general fund, but it helps to reduce their dependence on general fund support. So that's partly what their thinking is, to try to reduce their dependence on general fund support. Doesn't cover it, but it's close.
Question. Do you want to move this forward to Wednesday, or do you, pending getting the questions answered from Arthur, or do you want to wait until next week?
Do you want to move it all in one lump sum, or do you want to move what we have and then save the other?
Well, it's an order for fee schedule increase, so yeah. It has to be all together.
Well, and the... seemingly, I think the animal shelter question was the one question. So certainly if we move the whole thing forward, we get your question answered satisfactorily, then it's moving ahead. If we get your question not answered satisfactorily, or we need to alter the fee, because we can change these through the process. It's not done, no changes. We can certainly pull a fee or alter a fee in the course. That's the whole point of the public hearings, public comment,
yeah.
You know, second reading. I mean, that's right. The whole point of that is that we can change those fees or eliminate a fee.
So we can move it forward next week, which would all we would be doing, we wouldn't be adopting them.
No.
We would be setting a hearing.
Correct.
At which we could change these through that process.
Correct. Yeah.
Let's go for it.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
We'll move this one forward to Wednesday business session.
Yeah.
I will. And admin, and hopefully get your question answered.
Or if you want, I mean, it depends on how much detail you are looking for. So if you're looking for a lot of detail on animal, we should probably have the director there. If you want, you know, a more in-depth presentation of some of the thinking behind.
Well, you just had a question on that one in regards to the surrender. So mm-hmm. maybe you can just get that one answered for him by next week. So.
You know, Simon may have a question. Last time we ran into trouble by not having the managers there.
Mm-hmm. So maybe we should request having the managers present their fee.
Mm-hmm. That would be a good idea. Have them there to do that. So if there's any specific question, then...
Well, do you want them to actually present to say, here's my animal shelter fees, and this is, do a quick, you know, 2-3 minute presentation.
You want that?
Absolutely.
Or just have them available in case there's any public comment or question.
Well, if they are presenting, if the fees are being presented for Public Works, for whoever is presenting these fees, it probably should be the Public Works Director who is presenting these fees.
Right. But what we're doing, so next Wednesday is what the idea would be, is that you would adopt the order setting a public hearing.
Mm-hmm.
So
then we could have them come to the public hearing.
Then at the public hearing, which would I have to publish in the Courier a couple of times, and then you have a public hearing set. And that would be the case where the public would come forward. So that might be the better
time
to have the managers
mm-hmm.
there.
Mm-hmm. Yep. That would work.
Okay.
Okay.
So,
Okay. Anything else on financial review?
That's what I had.
Okay. All right.
There's more I could say, but I'll limit myself.
Thank you, Arthur.
Thanks. Appreciate the restraint.
Okay. Any other business for the board?
Not me.
All right, we already talked about the SoReady and Julie, so I won't bring that up now. Board business, 6A, resolution 2016-064, a reappointment to the Josephine County Parks Advisory Board, and that is Diana Orler to the Parks Board. So we shall move that forward, Commissioner Heck?
Fine with it.
Okay, and that can be consent. And then for the resolution 2016-065, reappointment to the Josephine County Mental Health Advisory Board. And so that one is Gail Renius. So she's already been on the board. So it's a reappointment. We can do that also, Commissioner Heck?
Yes.
Consent? Yes. Consent. Okay. Any other matters from commissioners?
Not me.
Okay. Very good. That being said, we adjourn at 11:16.